a fast car. Now I got a job that pays all my bills. We stay out drinking late at the bar. See more of your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me'd find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. Take your fast car and keep on driving.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We're going to have a bit of fun with Dan Riskin. Artificial intelligence is very impressive. It is a game changer, no doubt. ChatGPT has read the entire internet. So, Chris, I get the excitement, and I also understand the hesitation from people, the fear on how it will be utilized and how it could change our world. But I'll tell you what, I'm not exactly in the AI is going to take all of our jobs camp just yet. Because of stories like the next one, artificial intelligence is incredible. It is remarkable. But as it stands right now, it needs human beings to make it work. It's not perfect. Take this story about the Washington State Lottery, which was forced to take down a promotional AI-powered web app after there was a woman who used the site and it generated an image of her face on the body of a topless woman. It was supposed to be showing visitors various dream vacations and things that they could pay for if they won the lottery, and it showed her that.
Whoops.
Whoopsies. Dan Riskin joins us now, CTV's science and technology specialist. Hi, Dan.
Oh, hello. This is a fun one, isn't it?
Well, maybe that's what she was doing to celebrate after she won the lottery.
Yeah. I mean, everybody celebrates winning the lottery their own special way.
And I don't know.
I have no problem with that. But that isn't what was happening. This poor person. So she's a woman who lives in Washington State. She visited the website of the Washington State Lottery, and they have this thing on their website, which they don't have on the website now, I'll tell you. But they did then, and it was called Test Drive a Win. And the idea is, hey, if you win this money, what would it be like to spend it? How about a dream vacation? And so you go to the website, and you throw a virtual dart at a dartboard, and it hits some dream vacation from a pre-selected bunch of vacations. They have like a rodeo you could go to. They have like, I think there was some like bungee jumping, and there was like a safari, and there's running with the bulls and all these other things. And when your dart hits, you're invited to upload a picture of your own face. And then what it'll do is it'll use AI to create an image of you having that experience. And it was built very carefully with guardrails in place, and it's only supposed to select from a certain database of ideas. It's not like go wild. It's not like you come up with an idea for what you would spend the money on and you try to trick the AI into making an image that would be untoward. No, she just picked the, you know, she threw the virtual dart. It said swimming with sharks. So she said, okay, great. Here's my picture. And then the picture that came back wasn't someone in a shark cage with sharks all around or someone swimming with sharks. It was a topless woman on a bed with a bunch of fish swimming in the midair around her and some aquariums in the background. And that's
what on
not
earth?
Yeah, exactly. So she complained, but she didn't complain straight to the lottery. She went on talk radio first and in Washington State, and then the lottery heard about it. They took down the whole website. So they're in damage control right now. They're saying they don't understand how this could have happened. They have guardrails in place. They can't replicate this problem. Part of the problem is they don't have a log of all the images that have been created by the website. It sort of creates them and then just lets them go rather than keeping a copy of all of them, which maybe would have been a better idea. So they don't have proof as to whether this really did happen. There's some question as to whether she might have made this up, but they're not saying that. They're just saying, we want to play better safe than sorry. We're taking down the whole website, and we apologize for any confusion. That's kind of what they're saying.
Maybe when you win the lottery, you just want to get naked. I don't know.
Yeah,
but in all seriousness, sure. Dan, I'm being cheeky here, as was AI. This is really violating suddenly seeing your face on a naked body, and it was not the intent of the AI machine that they were using. So in future, maybe we ought to be more careful in how we test drive this thing.
Well, it points to one of the things about AI that makes it so powerful, but also unpredictable. And it's kind of the fact that they hallucinate, the fact that they do things you don't expect is part of the magic in them. I'm just right now reading a scientific paper about how you can get AI to help you write better captions for New Yorker cartoon contests, right? So how you can come up with better jokes. And part of the reason that AI really does help with that is that it thinks outside the box. It doesn't think like a human. It comes up with crazy ideas. But the problem with that is that every once in a while, there's something that every human would know is a bad idea. Like, clearly, it's a bad idea to make this kind of an image when somebody's asking for swimming with sharks. But AI, every once in a while, will try something new. And, you know, sometimes it's genius and sometimes it's, well, I don't know what you were thinking there. But when a human organization or a human being is responsible for that content, then it can be kind of risky to put your neck out like that. So, you know, I guess the lesson is you can use AI to help you, but you need to have a human watching over it to make sure that you've got this thing obeying the rules. If there had been somebody that got to, if you had somebody in a factory somewhere that had to approve the images before they went out, and there was maybe a 5 second delay as a result of that, this whole thing would have been very different.
I think most parents are firmly entrenched in the belief that they want to chat and to interact socially with their babies early on, because they know that those early social moments with baby can be very impactful later on. But you've got another story that you're going to tell us about, a new study that shows what happens with a 5-month-old baby when you talk to your son or your daughter.
Yeah, this is really cool stuff. I mean, one of the funny things about humans is the way we talk to babies. Like, we all talk like bumbling idiots when a baby's like, "Oh, look at your little baby, would you?" And we all have this dumb way of talking. People do it in every language. When you play a soundtrack of somebody in speaking Swahili talking to a baby versus talking to an adult, a person who does not speak Swahili can tell right away which of those two people that person is talking to. I mean, it's a universal part of humanity that we talk to babies in a funny way. It's called parent ease. And that way of talking to babies stimulates their brains. So for this latest study, they put kids, cute little 5-month-old babies, in this brain scanner thing that's super cute. Like, they're sitting in a chair and this thing descends down to their head and sort of sits like a giant hat that's on their head. And they can look out and they can interact with the world and they're sitting comfortably. But it's reading sort of what's going on with their brains using these powerful magnets. And they had a parent or a caregiver sit in front of the baby and go, "Oh, look at your little baby," and talk to the baby and go back and forth with them. And then for the other treatment, they had that same parent just as close, but turned to the side and talking to another adult. So they're still close to the parent and you're still having an interaction, but it's not the same. And then they looked at the brain activity, and you're not going to be surprised, but the brain lights up when the parent is talking to the kid with this parent ease much more than when the parent's talking to someone else. And what's really cool is that when they followed up with these same babies over the next 2 years or so, they could see that the babies who lit up the most when their parent was talking to them were the ones who had the fastest development in language skills. They were learning words the fastest as they became 2 years old and older. And so this really shows that those moments where you're interacting with a parent and the brain lights up, the more you can make that brain light up, the more you're setting that baby up with skills for their brain to just thrive going forward.
I love listening to your baby voice. That's the highlight of my day today, Dan. But you know, that is a type of speech that they have actually certified as a real language. There was a study back in 2022 where they looked across different cultures. And you're right, the researchers found that even in other cultures and languages, that we all tend to speak in that exaggerated sing-song way to kids. It's this repetitive way that all parents around the world really like to talk to their kids in.
Yeah, and we react. So one of the things that parents do instinctively, and uncles and aunts and other caregivers, grandparents, siblings, anyone who's taking care of a baby, this is another thing you do, is when the baby smiles at you, you smile back. And when that baby makes a funny noise, you might make that same noise back. Child psychologists liken it to playing tennis, where you sort of, the baby sends something across the fence to you and you hit it back. And whatever they send to you, that's what you respond to. And then they respond to that. And that back and forth is so critical to their brain development. And one of the big dangers right now is that a lot of parents, especially tired parents who are sleep deprived and have young babies, they're on their phone, and the phone just pulls them out of that tennis match, and they're not paying attention to their kid the same way. And what this study shows is that those parents who are able to put the phone down and focus on that baby as much as possible really do get dividends in terms of the development of that baby going forward 2 years and presumably farther beyond that.
What did you do with your kids when they were young?
Well, for the first time with my oldest, my son, I mean, I did everything I could and we had the baby talk and all that stuff. And then on the second round, we were surprised by twins. And so that was a whole other thing. And what I really remember about that was that you had to have those interactions in parallel, because it wasn't until they were about 3 years old that they really discovered that each other were people. They sort of were independently having their experience with parents. And so it was twice the work until they were about 3 years old. And then all of a sudden they started interacting with each other and playing with each other. And it was like, oh, thank you. The heavy lifting. I have assistance finally.
Great to hear from you today on this, Dan.
Yeah, enjoy the budget. Have fun with that.
I will. Dan Riskin joining us on the show. Or I'm not going to do it. I was going to try the baby talk. I can't manage it. He's our science.
You could use a little baby. That's great. I hope that becomes the theme music for my segment.
We're going to keep this on a hotkey. He's our science and technology specialist.
So if I get jealous,
on the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron.
Today, millennial and Gen Z Canadians can get a good job. They can work hard. They can do everything their parents did and more. And too often, the reward remains out of reach.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. The time is 5:23. That's the Finance Minister, Chrystia Freeland. She just delivered the budget. Budget 2024, the government is casting as a fairness budget. And they say that while the deficit projection for 2024-2025 is $20 billion, that core inflation is edging down. We know that we could get an interest rate cut as early as June. And the government is saying that it's going to pay for everything in this budget, which includes a lot of big ticket items and a lot of promises on housing, by actually changing the capital gains inclusion rate today, which is expected to bring in money that they say will offset all of the other federal budget takeaways, like the promises on housing and the $52 billion in new spending over 5 years. That includes $8.5 billion in new spending for housing. There are a bunch of notable initiatives. I will just quickly go through some of them again to recap. Some of them are new today. Others have been trotted out recently as part of the more than a dozen announcements that they announced over the past few months. Building apartments. The federal government is pledging a $15 billion top-up to the Apartment Construction Loan Program. It says that will result in more homes built across our country, approximately 30,000 new homes. The other thing locally that they talked about was changing what is happening at national defense properties, redeveloping properties that are built on national defense lands for military and civilian use. That's one of the things that will impact us here in Ottawa. Shrinking the federal public service. That is slated to shrink by 5,000 positions over the next 4 years. Joining us right now for his take, Pedro Antunes is on the line, chief economist with the Conference Board of Canada. Hello, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Christy.
What is your overall impression of this budget?
Well, it's a big budget. We have certainly had lots of information leading up to today about some of the measures that were coming into place. What we really didn't know is the timing of those measures. Would they be more back-end loaded later in the planning horizon and thus not have such a big impact up front? And the other big question was how we were going to afford this, because we'd heard, of course, that we were going to stick to the anchor, if you'd like, of keeping that debt to GDP ratio on a decline and not adding to our current deficit. But what was a surprise, I guess, was the, as you mentioned, the tax measures. So sizable tax measures here to offset at least some of these spending measures. So it's a big budget. What I'd like to say is upfront, just in this fiscal year that's in fact already started, we're looking at $11.6 billion in new spending measures just this year. So the issue that I see here is, again, on that countering essentially what the Bank of Canada is continuing to do, which is raising interest rates to weaken the economy, this is going to add a fair bit of stimulus to the economy this year.
What about that change to capital gains? The federal budget is hiking the tax on companies and individuals that are making more than $250,000 in capital gains. How do you think that pans out?
Well, this is a real concern. First of all, just in general on corporate income taxes, we're not competitive. We're no longer competitive with the U.S. And where the U.S. has seen a very strong investment of late in Canada, our business investment in productive capital, this is what affects our productivity, that's been lagging and, in fact, been declining over the last few years. So this is a real concern because it just adds another layer of complexity to our tax system. And, you know, it just jeopardizes perhaps some of that investment. So I think it's really an interesting measure. It's going to be important to see how it fares in terms of attracting investment and whether it causes further, erosion in our competitiveness with respect to other jurisdictions.
I'd like to play a clip here on that increase in taxes on capital gains. Here's the Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, talking about why they're doing this. This proposed tax hike on capital gains, she says, is going to be the right way to cover some of the multi-billion dollar commitments that the government has made.
Only 0.13% of Canadians with an average annual income of $1.4 million will pay more on their capital gains. For 99.87% of Canadians, personal income taxes on capital gains will not increase. I know there will be many voices raised in protest. No one likes paying more tax, even or perhaps particularly those who can afford it the most.
The government is estimating that by doing that, by using that tool, that they will rake in more than $19 billion over 5 years. Does that add up to you, Pedro?
Well, again, we'll have to see. I think, usually the finance department is very careful with these assessments. And, I can't contest those numbers, those estimates. What I can say is that, you know, they're already accounting for some movement, for some of, essentially some of these, some of this money to move perhaps offshore, and they're accounting for that in their estimates. Let's hope it's not worse than the estimates that they've put in place and that we don't lose more. The impact on investment, though, is really important. And I obviously there's fairness involved here, and we don't want to be we don't want to be crying wolf too loudly if, in fact, we don't see these kinds of moves away. But, at one point there was a race to bottom on corporate taxes across jurisdictions. We saw kind of an end to that. I'm not quite sure that, we're racing to the bottom here on the capital gains taxes. In other words, if we're putting in these measures and other jurisdictions are not, we're going to, again, erode our competitiveness and perhaps see some of that money move away.
Great to hear from you. Thanks so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Pedro Antunes, who's the chief economist at the Conference Board of Canada. The government is saying that this is a fair budget, that it is about helping Gen Z, millennials, $53 billion in new spending over the next 5 years. Some of these things we knew about. Some of them, like the capital gains change, is new. We'll get the small business perspective coming up momentarily. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business joins us next.
To just pretend, you cling to your papers and pens. Wait until you like me again. Wait for your love.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron.
Hi, 40. Welcome back to the show. Lots to talk about today and lots to unpack, which is why I'll let you know that we will have full coverage as well tomorrow on the show. You know, Vashi Kapelos is all over it. This is her wheelhouse, and I can see out of the corner of my eye that she is speaking to the conservative finance critic right now about the 2024 federal budget and some of the top takeaways. Many of these things, as I have repeatedly mentioned, were already announced. We knew that there was going to be a huge priority on housing. We knew that there was going to have to be some sort of movement in order to bring revenue in to pay for all of the promises. And the deficit is projected at $39.8 billion. In order to pay for some of the promises and to level the playing field for younger people, the government says that it is targeting Canada's highest earners with new taxes in order to offset the costs. So they're focused on housing supply, they're focused on social supports, and as I just mentioned, they are making changes to capital gains. And they're doing that in a bid to bring some more money in, and they said that basically anybody who makes a profit above $250,000 by selling their assets, the portion of which applies to their taxes moves from one half to two-thirds. And the government says this is going to make life more fair, especially for millennials and Gen Z. We'll get into that a little bit more. And we'll play a little bit more of what the finance minister had to say, because Vashi Kapelos just had a one-on-one interview with Chrystia Freeland on television. But I want to turn now to another portion of this, which is the small business part. A lot of small businesses have been white-knuckling it, hanging on for dear life after COVID-19. We do have one mention here, and I think this is pretty much the biggest mention that I heard on the Liberals' plans to help small and medium-sized businesses and what they're going to do to help them flourish again in our country.
Our new Canada carbon rebate for small businesses will soon return over $2.5 billion directly. That's right, over $2.5 billion directly to about 600,000 small and medium-sized businesses. This real meaningful support is a testament to our commitment to Canada's small businesses.
Joining us now, Corinne Pullman, who's the Executive Vice President of Advocacy at the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. Hi, Corinne. Welcome back.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
How is budget 2024 landing for you?
Well, it's definitely a mixed bag. We're really happy about the fact that there is some progress being made on returning that $2.5 billion that you just referred to from Minister Freeland back to small and medium-sized enterprises. This is money that's accumulated since 2019, so it's been sitting there for 5 years. So having a bit more of a commitment and a bit more of progress being made to getting that back is an important step. Of course, it's not clear yet when it's coming back or exactly how it's going to be distributed, though we have a bit more hints now than we did before. So we're very hopeful that small businesses will see that money before the end of the year.
Describe to our listeners why it's so consequential.
Well, the fact is, every Canadian out there, we all pay higher amounts because of the carbon pricing system, well, at least in the 8 provinces at which it exists. And Canadians have been getting at least a rebate check back every year since. A portion of that has also been paid for by small businesses. In fact, we've estimated as much as 40% of the carbon tax revenues in those 8 provinces are coming from small businesses. So the government had always set aside about 9% of that to go back to small businesses, but they never redistributed it. They kind of let it sit and grow. There were thoughts of making programs and all these other things, or narrowing the scope of who gets it. But finally, after a lot of lobbying by us, we do see a bit more what we'd like to see, which is redistributing that money back to a broader scope of small businesses who paid into it. The fact is, there's almost 600,000 businesses in those 8 provinces that should hopefully see some money back. It's been tough for a few years, and having a little bit of extra cash in your pocket is going to help sort of get past some of those bills that you probably are accumulating as a small business owner.
As you said, you have long called for this. Do you have a timeline on it?
Well, it wasn't clear on that. There is a request from business owners who want to get access to some of this money, who were operational at least at some point in the last 5 years, to certainly get their taxes in for 2023 by July 15th. If they get their taxes in for July 15th, they can be in the pool to potentially get some of that money back. So that's an important step. Post July 15th, the government says they can then have a better understanding of who's involved and what they have to do. it's going to be after that point, of course, that we hope to have more information about when it should come out. So again, we're hopeful that it'll be the fall or before the end of the year.
We're chatting with Corinne Pullman, who's the Executive Vice President of Advocacy at the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. You're happy about that, but in general, if you step back and you look at the entire budget, how much help is this really offering struggling businesses, would you say?
It's a mixed bag. It really is. I think we're quite worried about some of the capital gains inclusion changes that are going to happen. Some of it can seem quite good on the surface. For example, they're looking at increasing the lifetime capital gains exemption, which is a very important measure for businesses that want to sell their business because it's often how they pay for their retirement. That's going to increase from $1 million to $1.25 million. So that means that they can actually take the gains of up to $1.25 million and not pay any extra on that. So that's good, but then there are other measures that are only sort of targeting certain types of businesses and giving them certain advantages when it comes to capital gains over others, and that worries us. So it's kind of how we feel about a lot of this budget. It's like there are little components here and there that look very positive, and then there are other components that worry us. So it almost feels like we have to see how this sort of rolls out and get some more research done and understand a bit more deeply what some of the mm-hmm. details are within it to really get at what, you know, overall, is this a net positive or a net negative for our members?
Well, hey, I should point out, Corinne, it's only been an hour and 46 yeah. minutes since the budget was unveiled. And unless you were in the lockup all day, like some of my colleagues reading through the documents, even then it was something like a 400-page budget. So there's a yeah. lot to get through, isn't there?
There is a lot to get through and a lot of details in a lot of different areas. So,
how about the reaction from some of the business owners? Have you been hearing much from them so far today?
Not yet. I think part of that is because they're in the same boat. They're just sort of working their businesses throughout the day and are probably only now sort of, if they're able to, settling into seeing what actually happened, what impact it's going to have. We'll certainly be doing our part to make sure that they're aware of some of the measures that may both be positive and maybe not so positive for their businesses in the coming days. So we'll see. We believe that where the biggest questions will come will probably be around those changes to the capital gains inclusion rates.
Great to hear from you. Thanks so much
Thank
for calling.
You too. Thank you.
Corinne Pullman, who's the Executive Vice President of Advocacy at the CFIB, that's the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. I believe we've got some reaction to the budget that I'd like to go to now. As it happens, this is how it always is on budget day. First, you get all the journalists that are racing out. They file their packages for CTV, for television, for radio. They come on and they cover the various angles from small business to housing to what it means to younger Canadians. And then you start to dig into it a little bit further and you get people like the Conservative finance critic and you get the leader of the Conservative Party and the leader of the NDP. Let's go to Jagmeet Singh first. You've got that clip, Chris? Do we have a clip of Jagmeet Singh, or you want to go to Pierre Poilievre? Pierre Poilievre, here's the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada with his overview, his reaction to Budget 2024.
Mr. Speaker, this is the ninth deficit. The ninth deficit after the Prime Minister promised the budget would balance itself. And what did he do with the money? Everything he spent on has become more expensive. He's doubled the rent, doubled mortgage payments, doubled the needed down payment for a home, forced 35 homeless encampments in Halifax alone. One in four kids cannot afford food. And now he's adding $40 billion of new debt and new spending. That's $2,400 of new inflation. That is why Conservatives will vote against this wasteful inflationary budget that is like a pyromaniac spraying gas on the inflationary fire that he lit. It is getting too hot and too expensive for Canadians, and that's why we need a carbon tax election to replace him with a common sense Conservative government. Thank you.
So there's Pierre Poilievre, leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, with his reaction. Not too impressed. We'll go to NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, who also talked about the housing points in Budget 2024, saying that this was something that the NDP fought to have included.
Renters live in constant fear that they're going to get rent evicted or kicked out of their homes because large corporate landlords want to buy those buildings and then evict them. We forced this government to put in place a renter's protection fund, something that we've been calling for over a year. And that's going to help people stay in their homes and keep some of those affordable units affordable.
So in order to pay for this, we already talked quite a bit about the increase in taxes on capital gains, the hike for individuals when they are selling second properties, or the profit that they make when assets like stocks are sold. The change in the tax is expected to raise $20 billion over 5 years. Some of the housing promises, I'll just quickly let you know about a few more. Building homes on Canada Post properties. The government talked about that today. Converting old office buildings. Building apartments. $15 billion more, topping up the apartment construction loan program, which the government said is going to lend 30,000 new homes across Canada. As for the federal offices and making them into houses, there was no real timeline on that, but they did trot out a few figures on it and the amount of money that they're spending. They're promising $1.1 billion over 10 years. And they say that will be used to transform 50% of the federal office portfolio into housing. 551. There's just so much to say on this, and we are pretty much out of time. But please know, we'll have more coverage on it tomorrow. Danny has set up a special political heat panel, so we will dig in a little bit more, and we'll get to some of those details that we didn't have time for today.
I'm falling apart right in front of you. Can't you see? I lose control when you're not next to me.
Join the conversation on Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. Text 580-580 right now.
My focus is not on the Conservatives. My focus is on Canadians. And our budget today was about meeting the moment for Canadians. It was about fairness. It was about saying Canadians have real needs right now. They need more homes built faster. They need life to be more affordable. They need us to invest in the economic capacity of the country. They need us especially.
Just a little bit of an interview with the finance minister conducted by Vashi Kapelos. She was pressing on Chrystia Freeland about the focus of the budget, because we heard the Conservatives charging today that the Liberal government isn't focused enough on the fundamentals of healthcare. And the Liberal government has pushed back and has already said this is about fairness. This is about making sure that all generations in Canada, millennials, Gen Z, that they have a shot at a middle-class life. And that's how they're trying to sell their budget today. You tell me how effective that has been. We'll chat about it tomorrow on the show. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Marianne. Thank you, Chris. All the producers that worked on the show today. To the guests, thank you to you as well for taking the time to come on a very, very busy budget day. The time is 6 p.m. CTV News is coming up next.